It's quarterbacks week, the big one. We're unveiling the top 10 in football. Why quarterback is a position for old men in today's NFL. How fast Derek Carr is on the rise. Why folks aren't down on Andrew Luck yet. And Brady, Ryan, or Rodgers, who do you got? All that and so much more on a very special episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling here with Andy Benoit, and we have reached the end of the position ranking series. A bittersweet day. This is quarterbacks. This is the big one. And Andy, you know, as I was looking at the list here, we have 18 guys who got votes in our poll here, and the weird thing is there's all this talk of sort of the quarterback crisis in the NFL. We had 18 guys get votes. We had three or four who easily could have gotten votes as top 15 quarterbacks. It seems like, you know, the bottom third is problematic if you don't have one of the top 75%. But I feel like there's a lot of good quarterback play in this league. I feel like when we're talking about some of these guys toward the bottom of the list, they're still really good quarterbacks, franchise caliber quarterbacks.
I think the guys on 11 to 18, that range on this list, there you get some young guys there, and that's uplifting. The concern, Gary, and I don't know how much of a concern it is because the game has changed so much. I think older quarterbacks can function really well because it's more of an intellectual position than a physical position now. Think of all the pre-snap gestures and decisions that get made there and how quickly the ball comes out. There's less physical demand, more intellectual demand. So older players are more viable now than they used to be. But the concern is that there are still a lot of older players at the top. I mean, five of these guys in our top 10 are, I believe, over 35 years old, which used to be retirement age for a quarterback.
Yeah, I feel like they can stick around a little bit longer, though, with the protections in for quarterbacks and you know, science and technology and the way they train. And
they don't get hit the same way they used to. It's a different game now. Again, it's more of an intellectual game for quarterbacks than a physical game because of how much goes on before the snap, because it's a quick strike offense for so many of these teams.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump into it here. If you're joining us for the first time, I'm sure some of you are, since this is the quarterback show, of course. The way we do this, it is an AP poll style vote. So Andy, myself, and our researcher, that is Matt Booker, a fine young man, we each submit our top 15, and then a player who gets a first place vote 15 points, second place vote 14 points, all the way down to 15th place vote gets 1 point. Andy's vote counts double because he insisted and demanded that count double here. Also, he's very smart about football. So we are going to count down the top 10. We had sort of hinted we might do top 15 this week. We're not, but we are going to we'll do the others receiving votes at the end of the show, and we will hit those guys a little harder than we have on past shows. So it'll feel like a top 15 in the end, but we will stick with the traditional top 10 countdown. Let's start it up.
Number 10.
That is Derek Carr. And, you know, it's sort of a head-scratching move at the time, looking back to early in the offseason when they moved on from Bill Musgrave. Todd Downing got the promotion, and, he's the old position coach, you know, old position coach for Carr here. And, I don't know, I feel like this is going to be another big leap forward for Derek Carr this year. I think maybe the MVP talk was a little bit exaggerated last year, but I feel like he might move himself into that realm in 2017.
Carr played like an MVP in the second half of last season. The problem that we went over this at the time is the MVP talk began right after the end of the first half of the season, after that Buccaneers overtime win that Oakland had. And people saw the Raiders record. They were atop the standings or near the top. And they said, oh, well, the quarterback's young and they're atop the standings. The quarterback must be an MVP. And he has that kind of talent. Derek Carr has that talent. But it wasn't until the second half of last season that we saw it outputted consistently. And where you want to see him be more consistent, I think he will be, Some of his mechanics tend to waver a little bit at times, and I think he has a tendency to get impatient with some of his reads, and he'll come off of good reads a little bit early, and then almost the antithesis of that, he'll stay on some bad reads a little too long. That's all normal with young quarterbacks, and I think it'll get corrected with Todd Downing there as well. Not necessarily because Downing's a better offensive coordinator than Bill Musgrave. We don't know that. Downing's been a quarterback's coach for his whole career. He's younger than Carr, or he's younger than Musgrave, though. He's closer to Carr's age. Mm-hmm. They have an excellent rapport. He was Carr's QB coach. I can almost guarantee you Carr will be more comfortable personally with Downing in there than he was with Musgrave. And we have to assume that will reflect a little bit in his play, plus the natural progress, the progress he's going to show. He'll be higher on this list at this time next year.
Yeah. You know, one note on Carr here, fewest sacks in the league, or I should say lowest sack percentage, 2.8% of dropbacks last year. Is that a product of the offense, of the emphasis on the quick strike? Is that a quick release type of deal? Why did it work out that way in Oakland?
I think there are four reasons for that. Two of them pertain directly to Carr. One is he does move well within the pocket, and he has a quick release, which is what you want. That's the most important trait of quarterbacking, next to just can you throw the ball accurately and with some velocity. Secondly, though, he is mobile, so he can escape some of this stuff. But the other two reasons are the big ones. When Oakland spreads out and Carr does not have extra help in pass protection, meaning it's just their down five offensive lineman blocking, the ball by design is almost always out in three-step drop timing. It's a quick strike offense. When they don't spread out, when they do go downfield, they condense the formation. They almost always leave a sixth offensive lineman in the block. They played 6-0 mm-hmm. line more than any team in the NFL last season. Or they'll keep tight end Lee Smith, who they kind of view as a sixth offensive lineman, or a running back as chip block help. They are very much a protection-first team. So they don't ask Carr to do the old Kurt Warner seven-step dropbacks behind only five blockers. So they'd better be giving up very few sacks, because they invest heavily in protecting the quarterback by design.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll just say one more thing about Carr, because I don't know what your history is, Andy, but people seem to get really upset with your Derek Carr opinions. And part of it is he said something last year, mid-season, you exaggerate very rarely. You don't use hyperbole very often. You do it like three times a year, and one of the times was when we were talking about Carr mid-season last year, and people got upset.
Well, we got to tell him why, because you told me he's an MVP candidate after that Bucks game. It was like midnight, and I've only watched the film. I don't listen to a lot of the morning yeah. shows and stuff, and I was baffled that he was an MVP candidate. And I said, well, there's like 20 quarterbacks who have been better than Carr, and then everybody instantly wanted to know who were the 19 or the 20 quarterbacks better than Carr, and in reality, there were probably 13 or 14. So. I absolutely should be jailed for that kind of hyperbole. I get it. Raiders fans are not at all sensitive. And look, I like Derek Carr. I think he will be an MVP candidate. But if we're going to talk about him in those terms, he needs to be held to the highest standard of quarterbacking. And he really hasn't achieved that consistently for more than a few weeks so far. He did it down the stretch last mm-hmm. season before he got hurt. And again, by the way, this is all normal. You wouldn't expect your quarterback at whatever he's 23, 24 years of age, you wouldn't expect that guy to be even as far along as Carr is already. So I'm not going to say he's the best in the league. That's what people want to hear, but he's an excellent talent with a bright, bright future.
Yeah. And I just want to point out, to upset Raiders fans, we just had a redesign at the MMQB.com, and I was going through the archive and some of the old stuff. One of the first pieces I edited, I came onto the MMQB a year into it. One of the first pieces I edited was during that 3-13 rookie year for Carr, when a lot of, a lot of Raiders fans were thinking Jameis and Mariota in the upcoming draft. And you wrote Derek Carr was the future in Oakland. He was the franchise quarterback there, and you were kind of it when a lot of fans jumped on the Carr bandwagon, you were already driving it, Andy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I hope Todd Downing himself is listening, because I was in touch with him this offseason. He said, yeah, we can get together and you can explain to me why Derek Carr is no good. And I said, well, looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to telling you, Coach Downing.
There you go.
Number 9.
All right, let's jump ahead. Number 9 here. This is our first of the old guys. We're going to have some of them. This is Eli Manning, 36-year-old quarterback of the New York Giants. It's going to be a really interesting year for Manning. We talked about it a lot last season. You know, this Ben McAdoo offense, it relies heavily on the weapons, the receivers beating the man in front of them, beating the coverage in front of them. They have Odell Beckham Jr. Last year, they really didn't have anyone else. They just weren't very good at the skill positions. This year, you know, they bring in Brandon Marshall. They draft Evan Engram. Hopefully they get a little more out of the running game. This could be a really nice renaissance year for Eli Manning. I think it's kind of setting up that way.
Yeah, he has the weapons now. He didn't have the weapons last season outside of Beckham. Manning, if you get open, he'll put the ball on you. We don't talk about how accurate he is, but he's consistently accurate. The downside with Manning, and everybody can see this, and I don't have an explanation for it, is he's going to have two or three, well, there will be some games he'll have four or five just horrendous throws, and two or three of those will result in turnovers or he'll hold the ball, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. He's not a ball protector, but you know what? It's worked for him. I mean, they've been successful in the postseason before. They're a competitive offense. If you have a bad day defensively, you're going to get beat by them. I don't know why he's not a ball security guy necessarily. He's not going to change at this point in his career.
Yeah.
But I would not worry too much about it. They've been able to traverse it fine. And he's a guy, most ball, like Ryan Fitzpatrick, for example, is not capable of making up for his mistakes later in the game on a consistent basis. Manning is. So you take some bad with the good, and there's going to be more good with Manning.
Yeah. Well, let's jump ahead.
Number 8.
This is Matthew Stafford. I like Matthew Stafford. I like Matthew Stafford a lot, probably more than most. More of a spread-it-around point guard role last year, and he made the most out of, you know, we talked about Manning's lack of weapons last year in New York. The Lions certainly have a similar problem there. And Stafford, you know, under Jim Bob Cooter, he's become a true franchise guy, a true guy who can sort of lift the level of play for the rest of his weapons.
And Jim Bob Cooter has asked Stafford to be that kind of quarterback. What they've done there, they've simplified things. They don't do a lot of pre-snap movement, so everybody stands still. They tend to be in two-by-two formations, a balanced field. They don't have a whole lot of different formations. They put Stafford in position where he has to read the defense. They say, we're just going to line up. We're going to be very basic. And Stafford, your job is to look and search and find the nuances of the defense that we can exploit. It's the same thing the Colts did with Peyton Manning early in Manning's career. Mm-hmm. The Colts never used any pre-snap motion. They were very general in their formationing, and that's why Manning did so much work at the line of scrimmage. Stafford, you'll notice, just like Manning, they take the play clock almost all the way down on every snap because Stafford's doing so much before the snap. And what that's done is made him a more disciplined quarterback after the snap. He doesn't take the chances he used to take. We've called him a wild stallion before. He has a big-time arm, as good of an arm as anybody in the NFL. And sometimes guys like that, they've always gotten away with attempting throws they really shouldn't attempt. It worked in high school, it worked in college. It doesn't work the same way in the NFL, and they don't know how to quarterback otherwise. Stafford has learned how to quarterback otherwise. It's going to get Jim Bob Cooter a head coaching job before long. He's a young coach. I think Stafford's going to play well again this season, and he's going to lose his offensive coordinator because it's working so well.
Well, I mean, I think that's going to be a question there. You know, we saw it with Dirk Cutter. We saw it with Ben McAdoo in New York. Is it going to be one of those situations where the Lions make a move at head coach in order to keep the guy that's basically built their quarterback? And look, Stafford's in for a huge payday, too. Stafford's going to probably surpass Derek Carr's deal and be the highest paid quarterback in football for however long that actually lasts. But they have an interesting future coming up over the next year or so in Detroit.
Did you see the stat that Matt Booker found for us on Stafford's winning percentage against teams over 500?
Yeah.
This blew me away.
It's really bad.
This. Yeah, it's 5-46 against teams over 500 in Stafford's career. And we're not blaming that on Stafford. But, and you know, we're not big stat guys, but we've always said, Gary, you have to pay a little bit of attention to the extreme stats. And quarterback wins, I think that does correlate a little bit. It's not black and white, but 5-46 over 500, that really surprised me.
Yeah, that is troublesome. I mean, I'll say they've never had, you know, it's never been a situation where it's been a dominant defense in Detroit while he's there. You know, they've had some decent years with the defense. And, you know, like you said, last year, Golden Tate, sort of a gadget type of guy, is your number one receiver. Marvin Jones is a guy. Again, he's a nice complementary piece, but, you know, Eric Ebron is sort of a one-dimensional type of tight end. It's not a great set of weapons. They've never gotten the running game going too much, and...
Yeah, and so
I just
want to
make a bunch of excuses right now.
No, well, they rely on Stafford a lot, and he had several come-from-behind wins late in the season last year, and I just went over my Lions film notes the other day, and what stood out is I came away thinking, after reading all 16 games of their film notes at once, I thought, you know, they very well could play the same way this year and go 5-11. This was not a dominant team. It's not just because they were winning close games, but the way they played, they're very reliant on Stafford making big-time plays, and he's come through on that, and he has the ability to do that, but that tends to be ephemeral sometimes. He might make one less big-time play a game, and that's going to lead to 5 or 6 more losses. It's a fine line. So you're right, they're not stacked, which makes Stafford more valuable to his team than some of these other quarterbacks are to their team, although it's going to be hard. I think just about everybody on this list, their team would be sunk if these guys were to be on the sideline for a long period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Number 7.
We'll jump ahead to number 7 here, and this is, you know, we talk about the Lions and the fine line between 11-5 and 5-11, and it seems like this is a team who has walked the wrong side of that line for the last 2 years here. That is the Chargers, Philip Rivers. I mean, just so many injury problems with this team, and then obviously you're going to have a little bit more drama with the move to L.A., which, you know, I don't want to overrate it. I don't want to overstate how important it is, but, you know, when you're relocating as a team and you're you know, your guys are all finding new places to live, and you have a new part-time venue here that you're using. It's going to be a weird year for the Chargers, but if they all stayed healthy, I mean, Philip Rivers can still play, and he might not have. Well, what do you think of his arm at this point? I feel like, you know, obviously, naturally, in your late 30s, you're going to lose a little bit of arm strength. I don't think it's problematic, but I think it's dropped a little bit over the last year or two.
You know, he is such an anticipation passer. It almost, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because it does matter. Arm strength does matter, but he'll be able to camouflage that for a while. He doesn't stand out in that regard the way Drew Brees does, and Brees obviously has camouflaged it very well anyway. So I don't think arm strength will be the issue. He's a little hard. You always have to get past the throwing motion. I've been watching Rivers his whole career, and you still never get used to the awkward shot put throwing motion. So you always have to factor that in when you're evaluating just his arm. Gary, did you know in the last 7 years, San Diego and now Los Angeles, but they've been San Diego, of course, they've won double digit games 0 times. They've made the playoffs 1 time. All the other years they were 7-9 wins until these last two seasons, where they were 9 combined wins over these last two seasons. This has been a very average football team overall. I have Philip Rivers on this list, so this is not an indictment on him, but it's a little bit along the lines of the Stafford conversation. The Chargers just have not, they've been so average. They haven't been great at any point. Not recently.
They figured out, you know, I mentioned the injury problems, and look, everyone has injuries, but the Chargers seem to have it to an extreme level, and, you know, when I think of last season, I always think of Tyrell Williams, who I love as a talent, and I certainly think he has a bright future in the league, but you could just see he's not quite on the same page with Philip Rivers, and there were a handful of interceptions that resulted because of that. And you just kind of say, well, you know, if that's Keenan Allen instead, this is probably a much different result. They also, the Chargers also, I mean, goodness, the ways they figure out to lose games is
Saints game in week three was incredible.
Yeah.
At the end of the game there, where they had two turnovers on just blatant fumbles, and then they had a bad shotgun snap, and they blew it. I mean, that has happened, yes. The interception thing, how much should we blame a quarterback when he's not on this, when his receivers are not on the right page? Because that's the issue with Tyrell Williams. And they drafted Mike Williams, who he might not play this year now, but they didn't know that when they drafted him, of course, which tells you that I don't know how much they believe in Tyrell Williams and his ability to get on the right page, even though he's been a 1,000-yard receiver. Maybe it's Keenan Allen they don't believe in. Whatever it is, the wide receiving situation has been a little bit unsteady, and it has led to some turnovers that are not Rivers' fault, but they get credited to him. And how much of that should we blame on him? It used to happen with Eli Manning a lot, too. You would see his receivers, not Reuben Randall. Remember, he used to run the wrong route at times, and there'd be interceptions. And there's no way to – I mean, we'd only be guessing, I guess, to say, well, it's Manning's fault because he should know better than his receivers. He's responsible for the communication there. I don't know that. You'd have to look at how these guys interact and how they get along. I bet you ask 20 coaches and you get 20 different answers of who's responsible when the receivers continuously are not on the right page.
I think it's tough, especially with a guy like Williams. You know, Keenan Allen was supposed to be the number one receiver last year. And when you have the injuries, you know, you got to work these guys in on the fly. It's one thing, you know, if Mike Williams is healthy this year, or maybe we'll talk about him next year, and you've had a sort of, you know, sort of the full off season to get him acclimated to the offense. That's one thing. But I, you know, some of these young guys who get thrown in there after they've not been running many practice reps and not been playing with the quarterback very much, I think it's just the sort of the nature of the beast that there are going to be some issues. And I think that's what I chalked it up to last year.
Yeah.
And by the way, right after that Saints game was the game that they were right there in Oakland, and they ended up fumbling the field goal snap at the end of it and ended up losing it. It could have been a really good year for the Chargers, because then they beat Denver and then they won in Atlanta the next week. And it just
They also had the Dolphins game, which was a little later in this season, but it was right before their bye week on November 13th. And Rivers had three bad interceptions in that game.
Yeah.
Those were on Rivers, and that was the difference in that one. So it's not all the receivers there. I guess we need to talk about what makes Rivers good, because we've gone over the negatives here, but we're saying he's the seventh best quarterback in football. Real quick, I think there's two things that always stand out with him. One is he's very good on crossing patterns, throwing crossing routes. Those are easier throws, but they're timing-based. You have to read sometimes multiple levels of the defense, the linebackers and the safeties and their positioning, whatever. The Chargers are the best in the NFL at crossing patterns. They do it more often, and they do it out of more formations, and they can do it. Most teams only do it against man coverage. Rivers and the Chargers, they beat zone coverage with their crossing routes. So that's one. The other is checkdown passes, which also seem like the quarterback give up play. We shouldn't credit that. The ability to get to your checkdown right on time is a critical one, because in order to check it down, you have to identify which routes will not be open. And if you're checking it down when there are routes that are open downfield, that's bad. I mean, that's what makes the Tyrod Taylors and Colin Kaepernicks of the world flawed quarterbacks. They're leaving yards on the field to get easy completions because they're not understanding what's going on downfield. The other side of that are the quarterbacks that understand it to such a sharp, high level that they can tell who will not be open before it even has a chance to unfold, and they get to their checkdowns quicker. And what that does is create more yardage for your checkdown, because you're essentially throwing it when the defense is still in react mode, when the zone defenders are still retreating back into their zones. A 6-yard checkdown with Phillip Rivers easily becomes a 9 to 10-yard checkdown. Tom Brady's the other guy that does that really well. That's high-level quarterbacking that never gets, that doesn't show up naturally, and it's hard to capture that in the stats. But that's a big trait, and Rivers has always been tremendous at it.
Yeah, and that was another injury problem last year. Danny Woodhead, you know, did so much of that check down work, and obviously he was out for almost all of last season.
And
so.
Melvin Gordon got better at those checkdowns. I remember he destroyed the Buccaneers defense with it later in the season, but he's not Danny Woodhead yet. So there's still a learning process. That'll be a big factor for Los Angeles, is how well does Melvin Gordon contribute in the passing game and in their offense? That's going to mean how good is he on the checkdowns.
Yep.
Number six.
Another old guy here, Drew Brees. I mean, look, we've talked about Brees quite a bit, and the fact that he clearly has diminished arm strength, and they've sort of tweaked the offense to, to deal with that. But you know, he's still putting up monster numbers here.
Yeah, he is, and that offense is such a finely tuned machine. It's a system based offense anymore. It used to be Jimmy Graham created mismatches, Marcus Colston benefited from mismatches because they would put him inside and he would get matched up against safeties and especially linebackers. And he was so tall that you put him down the seams against those guys. Nobody could contest with him. Well, those guys are gone now. It's a different offense. They have more of a traditional slot receiver in Willie Snead. No one has filled the Graham role. Kobe Fleener's not anywhere near that kind of orbit. And Michael Thomas, their second-round pick a year ago, is becoming a bigger factor, and he's an in-breaking route runner. Slant patterns, slice routes, which are deeper slant routes, post patterns. Brees has been great at all of it. And the common denominator of everything we're talking about, these slants, these seam patterns, they're throws that occur between the field numbers. The Saints attack the middle of the field. That's what their whole offense is about. They very rarely target the sideline by design. This is why Brees' declining arm strength has not been as big of a deal. Outside throws are where the arm strength becomes a factor. Between the numbers, it's more about precision and timing, and that's where Brees is great.
Do you see a difference between when he plays indoors and when he plays outdoors?
I haven't noticed it. Maybe it's there. It'd be great to have. I'd like to have one of my researchers find that. I'm sure they have those stats easily available. So, I haven't noticed that. I think where you see the difference is when he has to throw deep by improvisation. So if it's a play action deep shot, and they're going to do some of those, they have Ted Ginn this season. If it's play action, seven steps, and then he has room to climb the pocket and launch it, he's fine. But if he goes deep and the pocket's a little bit muddy and he has to adjust some part of his mechanics to account for that, that's where you start to see the difference with Brees. That's where the arm strength shows up, because now it becomes more of just a pure arm throw and the ball loses energy at the end. So you see that every once in a while. It hasn't been a big problem. Obviously, the stats are still there. This offense is top five easily every season in terms of production. But you do see it once in a while with Brees.
Yeah, I guess I ask because, I mean, look, his contract situation, it's basically a contract year. He had it built into his contract that he cannot be franchise tagged after this season. So there will be a decision to be made. I'm just wondering if we're going to see a, you know, Peyton Manning style, move. Yeah, hey, maybe Denver's in the market. Maybe it doesn't work out with Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian this year. And I just wonder what kind of market Brees has if he ends up being available next March.
That's an interesting topic. And I think his market would be very good for the simple reason that coaches around the NFL love him. They are in awe of Drew Brees. Whenever you talk about the correct way to quarterback, how do coaches want it played? Brees almost always is the first guy mentioned and the guy that all the other coaches jump in and say, oh yeah, Brees, yeah, good call. What they love that he does so well, and the reason the Saints can throw between the field numbers, is when you master all of the other elements of quarterbacking, when you can throw the ball, you know where to throw the ball, you know the timing, you know what the defense is doing, you're 30-something years old, it's all second nature, the last level for you to achieve is the ability to manipulate defenders, to the pump fakes, looking one defender off, looking one way, making him move, and then throwing the other way, little shoulder rolls, all these nuanced, subtle traits of quarterbacking. That's what separates good from great once you become a high-level QB. Rodgers is tremendous at it, and he was good at it very early in his career. That's where he's different. Breeze is the guy everybody in the NFL says he's the best in the league at this, and it's some will tell you it's not really close. And that's another reason he can get by with no arm strength, is he doesn't have to throw the ball through or over defenders. He can relocate defenders to adjust his throwing lanes. He can manipulate defenders really well.
All right, hang on a second, Andy, before we move on. The biggest thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream is also the only thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream. Introducing new Barbasol razors, the brand America trusts for a close, comfortable shave, now has a premium disposable razor. Barbasol's close shave technology on every razor means you get an advanced pivoting head and ultra-thin open flow blades. The Ultra 6 Plus razor also features a seventh blade specifically designed to refine and style tricky areas like under the nose, sideburns, and beard. Visit Barbasol.com and get a $2 savings coupon and see for yourself why the Barbasol razors are the number one new disposable razors out there. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol. I'm excited about that. I use Barbasol. I use the shaving cream. Good to hear. All right, back to the countdown.
Number five.
Well, let's move it along here. Number five on the countdown, that is Andrew Luck. You know, certainly the results have not been quite what we would have liked to see at this point in his career, but it's been a bad team. I mean, I don't really think it's excuse making. I guess it's technically an excuse, but it's also a factual statement. It's a bad team, and it's not a very good offense outside of the quarterback.
Sometimes it's not an excuse; it's an explanation, and those are different things. Luck has not had a great offensive line. The receiving corps, nobody talks about like Moncrief and Philip Dorsett. Those guys have been fine, but they haven't come along as quickly and solidly as you'd hoped either. And then the Colts don't have any kind of defense to rely on. It's a very much a week-to-week defense. So there's a lot on Luck. Having said that, he has to adjust his style of play a little more than he has, given what's around him. He is a late in the down quarterback. He wants to hold the ball and extend the play within structure. So think Russell Wilson, a lesser to extent Ben Roethlisberger, especially early in his career. Yeah. Those were late in the down QBs, but they broke the play down and then liked to go sandlot. Luck does not break the play down. He likes to keep it structured and just extend it. And that naturally will lead to the quarterback getting hit more because he's staying in the pocket. Pockets are always going to close down, almost always in the NFL. So it's a fine line, though, Gary, because we say, well, he should adjust the way he plays, and I think he does need to a little bit. But that also is the reason he's great. Nobody else in the NFL can do it like he does, extending the play within structure late in the down. And the Colts are a deep drop passing team because that's where Luck's most comfortable. Rob Chudzinski knows how to throw quick strike passes. He knows how to draw those up. They were going to do it. They never really got around to it because that's not Luck's game. So what's the line you walk there? You know who Luck would be great under? And I think he's already played for the guy. Bruce Arians. If Luck were in that Cardinals offense, Luck is very similar. He's a better Carson Palmer is what he is, a more physically gifted Carson Palmer. But that's an offense that attacks the field vertically, but still plays on schedule. The Colts are an offense that attack vertically, but they're not always as consistently on schedule. And there's a fine line there, and it's a hard one to walk.
I was going to say, if you were running the Colts right now, would you take the plunge? And we'll talk about this sort of a transition with you know, another guy on this list, and then one of the guys in other receiving votes. Would you sort of demand, would you build an offense that would force him to change his style and get the ball out of his hands more quickly? Or are you basically just turning Luck into, are you moving away from Luck's strength too much if you do that with him?
Well, who's the guy that's done that? We talk about Ben Roethlisberger a lot. He's the only guy we've seen that was a late in the down sandlot style QB who has transitioned into a disciplined quick rhythm spread quarterback. That's what he does now. He's more Tom Brady than he is Ben Roethlisberger anymore.
Yeah.
So the question is, can we make Luck into what the Steelers made Roethlisberger, and should that be the case? And I think when you put it that way, I think you have to, don't you, Gary? Because like the Panthers are going to want to do this with Cam Newton. We've talked about that. They're going to try to – Ron Rivera even said recently, hey, look what the Steelers did with Ben Roethlisberger. They became a quicker strike offense. We're going to do that. That's why we got Samuel from Ohio State. That's why we drafted McCaffrey from Stanford. Well, the difference is Cam Newton's not as good as Roethlisberger. He cannot throw the ball with that kind of precision and accuracy. Luck can. Luck can do what Roethlisberger does. So to answer your question, I think you do want to force that and force that issue and make Luck more of a quick strike thrower, because you can always go back to the sandlot. You can become that when you need to be, but you only want to do it when you need to do it. I think the rest, yeah, you want to make the game simpler. What do you think, though?
I would just be terrified of the amount of injuries he's suffered over the last two years.
Starting this to add up. Yep.
You know, if this guy's going to be my franchise quarterback into his 30s, and you know, as we see from this list, you can still play this position at a high level in your mid and even late 30s, or you know, in the case of one guy, and you know, possibly to the age of 40 and beyond. So you know, it'd be nice to have that. If I were the Colts, I don't necessarily want this guy burnt out by and banged up by the time he's 32 years old or something like that. So
he's almost 28 years old now, if I recall. So now's a good time to do that. You can wait till he's in his 30s, but you're right, he's getting banged up. And the last thing I would add on Luck, Gary, is that people outside of the NFL, the media, and I think especially fans have started to, they haven't totally dismissed him yet, not even close. But they're starting to slowly push him into the second tier of quarterbacks. Oh, he hasn't become the franchise guy. The Colts haven't gotten back to the AFC. They haven't had any playoff success since that AFC title loss to New England. He gets hurt too much. Interceptions. All of that's true. People in the NFL are not, they have not begun that pushing process. They're not viewing Luck as anything less than a top-tier quarterback still. So the NFL is not at all down on Andrew Luck. Everyone's in agreement there. He is tremendous. He's elite. Fans, which for totally understandable reasons, have started to drift away from that a little bit, but football people not yet.
Yeah. However, have they seen that ESPN graphic that showed the box score stats between Luck and Hoyer and showed that Hoyer is better? Maybe once they see that.
Maybe they need to look. Yeah, you're right. They're probably not paying close enough attention. That's the issue.
Yeah. All right. Before we jump ahead here, quick note, we have the Giant Mailbag Show. That is the next show, the big beach party blowout mailbag. Again, you can send us questions regular, you know, the usual avenue, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI on Twitter. We're both on Facebook or talkback@themmqb.com. But once again, if you want your question answered 100% guaranteed, leave it in an iTunes review, and we promise we will answer it on the Giant Pool Party Mailbag Show Summer Fun. We'll do it at my parents' retirement community. They have the pool there.
Where is that community?
It's up in Milford, Connecticut. No alcohol, and we're gonna have to. You know, they only have so many passes for the pools, so we're going to have to do some pass backs to get everyone in. But, and for goodness sakes, do not run around the pool.
I swim once a week, and little kids always run, and the lifeguard blows the whistle. Hey, no running. Is that an issue at a retirement community pool?
Oh, yeah. Like,
who's
like
running?
Once a month? Yes.
So these have to be like the grandkids that visit.
Yeah.
It's not the denizens of the retirement community.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, pools in general are just death traps, really. But
you slip, you fall, you crack your head, you fall in, you drown. That's the
there
fear.
There you go. I say that as someone who was once asked to watch my 3-year-old brother when I was age 6 in our pool, and it did not go well. It ended with my mom having to run out and dive into the pool and pull him out of the deep end because I couldn't swim at the time.
Yeah. Well, that sounds a little like bad coaching, doesn't it? Who gave you the assignment?
I would absolutely call it bad coaching to have the 6-year-old who couldn't swim watch the 3-year-old in the pool.
You still have a brother, right? Everything worked out?
Yes. Okay. Everything worked out. He listens to the show, by the way. I'm sure he will weigh in. I will take no blame for that mishap, though. But anyways, send your questions via iTunes review. We will answer it, we promise. But let's get back to the countdown here.
Number four.
This is number four. This is Ben Roethlisberger. You know, we just talked a little bit about Ben Roethlisberger, the way he changed his style. He was in extend the play, you know, shrug off, you know, all the 250-pound pass rushers and then make a play. And what's the term, Andy? Read your mail type of guy now.
He reads the defense's mail now. That's what he does. They spread out. They unbalance the formations. They'll put Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell and some sort of motion. Those are their mismatch-making pieces, and Roethlisberger evaluates how the defense reacts, and he plays accordingly. And I asked him last year, I saw him at training camp, and I asked him if the pump fakes and what he's done with that, and how because that's another guy, you know, he manipulates the defense that way. And how often is the pump fake very deliberate and just all smoke and mirrors? And how often is it actually you were going to throw and then you changed your mind? Because this is the essence of his game. And he said early in his career, it was almost always he was going to throw and change his mind. He didn't know. He said, I didn't know what I was looking at. It's why I was always pump faking. Now it's about 70% just BS. He's going to go the other way the whole time. The pump fakes just part of the process. We've gone over it already. He's a very different quarterback now than he was early in his career. And I to me, this is why. Yeah, I know he had the Super Bowls early in his career when he was that Sandlot QB. It really is about you have to evaluate just beyond Super Bowls. Otherwise, there's like five QBs in the whole NFL. Yeah. So I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, no question, because of what he's done now in the second half of his career.
Can I just I'll just throw this out there. He was so shaky late last year, and you know, the Steelers kind of changed their approach. They were very, very run heavy. Very reliant on Le'Veon Bell, which, I mean, when you have Le'Veon Bell, that's a good reason to rely on the run game. But I don't know. I feel like Ben sort of took a step back in the second half of last year. I didn't know if it had to do with sort of the, you know, they had sort of a rotating cast of characters opposite Antonio Brown at receiver. But I don't know. He didn't seem like the Ben of, you know, 2012 through 15.
Yeah, he was way inconsistent in the second half of last season. That got lost because Pittsburgh was winning. And, boy, how good do you feel if you're Pittsburgh, by the way? That's your Hall of Fame quarterback struggled by his standards. And you went on a hot streak and almost came up one game short of the Super Bowl. They became a running offense last season. Roethlisberger, he had some bad. I mean, the Miami game was a bad one for him. The Baltimore loss the next week, middle of the season. That was one of the worst overall offensive performances I've seen in a while, just for a whole team, and he was part of that. They won the game, but at Buffalo, he had three really bad interceptions. I mean, you're right. He was not great down the stretch last season, but they adjusted their offense and became more of a run-based team, and it worked out for them. They have the weapons back this year, and I don't know if they didn't have the weapons in the first half of last season either. They had some of those guys out of the lineup. Martavis Bryant, of course, was the big one. So it's not like Ben needs great players around him to thrive, but whatever, they've got great players now. So I would imagine this will all naturally rectify itself. You give a veteran QB Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown, that alone's enough. They've got depth at wide receiver, and of course they have the Le'Veon Bell factor when he shows up.
Yeah.
Number three.
Number three is the reigning NFL MVP. That is Matt Ryan. And I guess the big question with Ryan will be, how does he follow it up? The last time they had to switch at offensive coordinator, he had a rough first year, and then obviously he came around and had a monster year with Kyle Shanahan, who was just an absolute warlock, you know, calling plays last year. But I don't know, what should you expect out of Ryan this year?
It's a philosophical question. Is when everything has gone well, and for the most part everything went well, this was some coaches have told me this is the best offense they've ever played against. That Falcons offense last season was so well designed, and it had such a great balance of weapons, styles of players whose their styles all complemented each other. The offensive line has been together for several years now. It's stayed healthy. Everyone's gotten better. Jake Matthews as the best left tackle that nobody talks about. Everything's in place, and it brought them all the way to the Super Bowl, and a Super Bowl they probably should have won. So then you hear Steve Sarkisian. Now, he comes in naturally. You lose your offensive coordinator. He gets a head coaching job. Sarkisian's the guy, and we hear it sounds like, well, the plan is we're going to keep a lot of what Shanahan did, but we're going to add some new wrinkles ourselves too. And the question is, should you do that? If you're not evolving, you're probably falling behind. That's the way the world is today, and that's the way the NFL is. And do you still want to evolve when you already had evolved into so far and away the best offense in football? It's a dangerous game you play when you start changing things, but it's probably a dangerous game to not change things. So yeah. What do you do there? And I don't know the answer to that. And it's unfortunate because however it goes, we're going to base our answers on the results. If it doesn't go well, we're going to say, how could they have changed it? If it goes great, we're going to credit Sarkisian for taking them to yet another level. It's a hard thing to figure out. And it's Matt Ryan's going to have a lot of responsibility in this equation. I imagine he's going to have a lot of say in what they do offensively.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's also the kind of thing. I mean, look, how much better can it go? It went really well last year. It seems only natural that he would slide back a little bit and sort of regress to what would be his sort of average level of play if you're Matt Ryan.
Well, the tricky part though, Gary, is so much of what they did. They won by design.
Yeah.
And if you can read the field, which all these QBs are getting better at reading the field every year, that comes with experience, and they're all smart guys, and Ryan is as smart as any of them, then it reasons that you'll continue to get better. He's an accurate passer. He's not a big-time arm, but he's an accurate passer. He plays on schedule. He's tough in the pocket. He's a better mover than people realize. So he has all the quarterbacking traits. And he's a smart player that can own the game intellectually. So, it's possible he could get 20% better between now and the end of his career.
Yeah. Well, it should be, you just looked back 2 years ago, first year under Kyle Shanahan, and you just kind of, you worry. I worry. I'm
yeah,
a worrier.
You're right. I forgot about it. You're right. About. He had a tough adjustment to make. What that was largely, for one, Shanahan is a very unique personality, and he takes some getting used to. That's mm-hmm. just the reality. But two is Shanahan had Matt Ryan play on the move a little more. Now, Dirk Cutter, the year before, as their offensive coordinator in Atlanta, he had instilled that in Ryan, and Ryan had actually done very well with that. So that wasn't as big a transition as people think, the rollouts and the zone action stuff and making Matt Ryan, who everybody thought was a statue, making him play on the move. But that still was a little bit of adjustment. I think more of it, though, Gary, was Kyle Shanahan's a hard personality to acclimate to. Once you do, the guy's a borderline genius, and it's going to go well, but he's a cold pool to jump in and get used to.
All right. Well, let's jump ahead to the top two, and I think this is the big drama because I think there's a clear top two in the NFL, and I was almost a coward and split my first place vote, but I eventually settled on a one and a two. But
hey, Gary, I have an idea here. Remember, did you ever watch America's Funniest Home Videos back in the early 90s?
Yeah, people were always getting hit in the crotch with stuff.
Oh,
yes.
It's great, yeah. And people don't get hit in the crotch the same way they used to now. They'd always take the top three, and they'd say who's number three, and then they would tell who's number one, leaving people to figure out number two themselves. I think our number two guy is more interesting than our number one guy from a discussion standpoint, and I am proposing now that you reveal number
do you
one.
Want to switch? First of all, is that really number, how they did it? I honestly don't remember.
It was, because it built the say, here's number three, and then they go, and the winner is, and they would announce the winner rather than announcing number two and letting you figure out number one. I think number two is more interesting from a discussion standpoint.
So let's go number one.
Number one.
So the winner is Tom Brady. Tom Brady is number one on our list. For all the talk we've just done over the last eight guys about the ability to read the defense's mail and what you can do pre-snap, that is Brady. Brady is the ultimate in that.
and why you give Brady... So New England is a systemized team. I mean, it's not Brady's not just winning these games by himself, obviously. And they've been doing it a long time, and a lot of things go well for them. It's a whole organization. But why you give Brady credit for that is because he has a lot of input in how that goes. He helps lay the foundation. He's one of the construction workers and the architects there of what they're always building in New England. And coaches around the league are in awe of the way he runs a practice and how much command and control he has. And now he's got an offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels. He's had him a few years and a few times where the relationship's really good. That's a huge factor because McDaniels and Brady understand how to run a practice together. You basically have two coaches, one of them who can throw the ball extremely well. That's why Brady's still the best in the NFL. I think he's the best of all time, and that's probably its own podcast discussion, although that seems to be less of a discussion this year, isn't it, Gary? Doesn't it kind of feel like everyone's ceded that debate to the and Tom Brady has won it?
Yeah, I mean, the only people who haven't ceded are people who want to throw out the hot take. Something about cheating cheat. Well, and
the other
and
night
that...
I was at dinner with Peter King the other night, and
yep.
the I guess it's a maitre d, whoever's the guy that's like going around being nice to everybody and sitting you down. Okay, Lou, our producer here in the studio, is giving me a thumbs up. The maitre d came over and wanted to talk football, and his argument to Peter was Montana's better because Montana always, he never lost the big one. Every time he made it to the Super Bowl, he won it. And to be honest, I was enjoying talking to Mater D was nice, but I wanted to get back to the conversation with Peter, so I didn't want to prolong this. The counter argument to that is an obvious one. It's, well, first of all, he did lose big games because he made four Super Bowls,
yes.
Which means the other years he lost
he only
playoff
played
games.
4 years.
Yeah, right. So he did lose some of those big ones. They just weren't the ones you watched with your friends and family at the end of January. And two is it's better to make a Super Bowl and lose it than to not make it at all. And Tom Brady has gone to, what, 7 Super Bowls, 5-2 in the Super Bowl. And some of his best seasons were years that they lost the AFC Championship and years that they lost the Super Bowl. You could argue he was better in those years than the years that they happened to win it. So I don't think there's any debate left with Tom Brady. He's done it in multiple eras, in multiple systems, with tons of different types of players around him. Very few of them, who am I forgetting? Welker, Randy Moss, Rob Gronkowski, those are probably the only three truly unique difference-making matchup pieces that he's had to throw to.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, that's a weird New York thing. I shouldn't say it's a weird New York thing. I do know where that's coming from because there's a certain radio host who sort of brought that up a couple years ago, how Montana's the greatest big game quarterback and that sort of mm-hmm. thing, and it was all very weird. So I think that's why that sort of has taken hold in the greater New York area. One thing about Brady specifically is I'm stealing a line. I think it might be from Dan Marino about arm strength and about how, you know, basically any NFL quarterback can throw the ball with velocity, you know, with a clean pocket where you can basically, you know, take your full stride forward and stuff like that. Brady still makes some unbelievable throws, and I'm thinking back to that that throw to Chris Hogan in the Super Bowl.
The 16-yarder when they were backed up.
I feel like he's still one of the best in the league at delivering those kind of throws when he is, you know, whether it's a muddled pocket or when he's literally getting like a shoulder pad in the sternum when he has to make a throw.
He doesn't blink at all in the pocket. Which is funny because the way to beat him is to crumble his pocket and get him moving. But you have to leave no doubt. If you make Brady move a little bit in the pocket, he's still Tom Brady. And I don't mean to pick on guys, but we talked about Tyrod Taylor, Colin Kaepernick, those type of QBs, Ryan Fitzpatrick to a lesser extent. When you muddle their pocket a tiny bit, they become a different quarterback altogether. They have to move, and now they're a different guy, and that's the guy you want them to be playing as. Brady is Brady until you absolutely ruin his pocket. He can make throws with bodies around him. He doesn't lose his presence and understanding of the reads downfield. you know, he's not an anticipation passer in the nature of that offense, Gary. It's because it's they do so many option routes that you can't anticipate.
Yeah.
You have to see what your receiver does before you can throw. But when he has to be, that throw to Hogan you referenced, which was one of the great plays of all time, and it doesn't get talked about, but that they would not have won the Super Bowl without it. It was a third down and long conversion. He threw outside under severe pressure, backed up. That was a big, big time anticipation throw. That was a Super Bowl winning anticipation throw. So he can do that. That's as good as it gets. If you can make strong-armed, and that's Brady has great arm strength. Nobody talks about that either, but his arm is excellent. If you can make strong-armed anticipation throws on obvious passing situations under severe duress, that's Hall of Fame-type quarterbacking, and that's what Brady does. And the other thing, real quick, Gary, that sets New England apart and why they're so hard to play against now in their current design, we'll see what they become with Dwayne Allen and Brandon Cooks. They're going to change a little bit, but they do those inverted formations where the running backs are split out wide and they do some pre-snap motion. All that is designed to simply give Brady the man or zone indicator. Is the defense in man coverage or zone coverage? And if you give Brady that information, he'll beat you almost every time. So the chess match becomes more advanced. The defense has to figure out, how can we disguise the most basic intentions of ours? How can we look like we're in man when we're actually in zone or some variation of that? We have to do these super disguises to combat Tom Brady rather than subtle nuanced disguises, which is what most disguises are. That's why New England's so good. They beat you before the snap.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up our salute to America's Funniest Home Videos and reveal number two.
Number two.
That is Aaron Rodgers, and I'll give my quick Aaron Rodgers take, and then you can take it away, Andy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The reason I almost split the vote is because I feel like you know, in the fantasy world where you are building your teams, let's say your fantasy football team were going to be assembled as a real actual team, I would take Aaron Rodgers first, just based on the fact that he can probably do anything in any offense. And you know, he'll basically figure out a way to get it done.
I like that. So this is why I thought Aaron Rodgers, we want to talk about him last. He's the most fascinating QB in the NFL to me, because here is what is unequivocally true. Nobody in pro football, like coaches, mainly coaches, front office guys, I don't know if they look at the game this way all the time, but coaches, absolutely, other players, wide receivers, no one would argue with this. When you put on the Packers film, Aaron Rodgers, his fundamentals, his mechanics, especially in the lower body, are exactly how you would never tell someone to do it. Don't ever do that. Your feet should not look like his. His reads, he doesn't always, I don't know if he doesn't see it, but there are always guys open on time within the design of the play where it's obvious the ball goes there and Rodgers doesn't throw the ball, and you don't know what he's looking at. You literally don't know. His helmet's going all over the field. His progressions, if you're supposed to go from A to B to C to D, he'll go A, D, C, B, X. I mean, he'll look all over. You don't know what he's doing, what he's looking at. It's exactly how you're not supposed to play quarterback. And here's what's also true. He's the most talented guy in the league, and he beats you almost every time, even though he's doing this stuff. And sometimes he beats you because he's doing this stuff. His arm is the best that I've ever seen. His quick release, arm strength, the ability to throw from different platforms, off balance, off movement. He's the best passer to ever play the game. He doesn't play the game the right way, and that's why Green Bay's offense is so inconsistent, but that's also why they're so hard to play against. And if you're Mike McCarthy, that's not an easy guy to coach. And I think Rodgers, from what you hear, he's a strong personality too, a little bit of a different personality. Not everyone is comfortable with that. This is a hard guy to coach.
Yeah, and I mean, look, he's 33 now, so you kind of wonder what happens, you know, in 5 years when maybe the physical traits start to deteriorate. But he also. Peter King did a great piece with Rodgers, I think, two off seasons ago, where Rodgers talked about basically his his absolute the fact that he lives in horror of absolute terror of throwing interceptions and basically the art of avoiding the interception, which, you know, obviously no one wants to throw an interception, but
yeah,
you know, the fact that he just it ruins his life if he throws an interception one week. He talked about one that he threw in the red zone against the Bears a couple of years ago, and you know, it was like he was talking about the worst day of his life. But yeah, he, you know, for all the weird out of structure stuff he does, there's never a catastrophe in his style of play, which is just it's wild.
I wonder if that's why he takes so many sacks, is because the guys that don't want to throw interceptions, it reasons that they're going to hold the ball longer at times, especially if he fears it as much as you said he does here. So you wonder about that. The other weird part of it all, Gary, is so he doesn't play on schedule. He's unconventional, but sometimes he does play on schedule, and it's like a switch is flipped. I remember the Giants playoff game. He was off schedule the first quarter and a half. Late in the second quarter, the switch was flipped, and when Rodgers is playing on schedule, you cannot beat him. He's unstoppable. So I don't know why he does that. Why sometimes he's a near perfect quarterback. Other times he's so unconventional you don't know what to do with him. But what we're talking about is a guy that's simply more talented than everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, it works either way, no matter how he does it. All right. We're going to reveal the others receiving votes here. We'll touch on these guys a little more than we have in previous shows. Just a couple. Once again, mailbag show coming up next week. If you want your question answered, send it via iTunes. That is a 100% guarantee we will answer it if we see it in an iTunes review. You can also send it to Twitter, Facebook, or talkback@themqb.com. If you missed the previous position ranking shows, we did all of them. We did all of them except for special teams, I should say, but that's still a lot of them. Go back and listen to them. And if you are a first-time listener to the show, please join us all year. We'll be here weekly during the regular season. We are out first thing Monday morning for subscribers. And we cover the entire NFL. Everything that happens Sunday, you'll hear all about it on Monday morning. And it'll be smart football talk. Or at least we like to think so. Yep. It's usually smart football talk.
We do the best we can.
Others receiving votes. Let's run down that. As we said, 18 guys receiving votes. And like I said, there were like three or four other guys where it's like, wow, no one voted for him, huh? But he could, you know, some of these guys you could easily argue as top 12. But the guys who actually received votes here, starting with, of course, this would be number 11. That is Russell Wilson, then Joe Flacco, Cam Newton, Carson Palmer, Jameis Winston, Sam Bradford, Carson Wentz, and Marcus Mariota. We'll start with a rapid fire. We'll go Russell Wilson first. Everyone voted for him. He just didn't have enough points to make the top 10. You know, he's like we talked about, some of these guys who can play out of structure, make plays late in the down. That is Wilson, especially early in his career, but now he is a little more well-rounded, a little more able to make the quick strike, quick timing throws.
Yeah, they've done. And by the way, we vote 15, just so if anyone's wondering, like, did someone have Mariota top 10? We vote top 15,
top
and then we
15,
take the
yeah.
10 highest scores from that. So that's why you have so many guys. Wilson, yeah, they've done a good job in Seattle of helping him become disciplined by what they spread out a lot, and that's where their quick timing throws come. They also unbalance the formations, which reveals the coverage for Wilson. He has to throw quick because he's not tall enough to see in the pocket. So dropbacks become a little bit of an issue. So you want to get the ball out before the pass rush is fully unfolded. And when they've emphasized that to Wilson, to his credit, he's responded well.
Yeah. Flacco was 12. Weird years in Baltimore. That offense really hasn't found its rhythm.
He was a big reason why. He was not good last year. His footwork was lazy, sloppy at times. His decision-making was inexcusably bad at other times. He has the arm to make incredible throws every once in a while, and he'll do that every game. They want to be a kind of a quick-strike rhythm passing team in Baltimore, which I don't think that fits how they're built, but that's what they want to be. If they're going to play that way, their quarterback has to be significantly more disciplined than he was in 2016.
Well, I do wonder if the footwork is related to the ACL injury, which was late in 2015, and maybe you know, we talk about other guys at other positions sort of need that first full year back to you know, come all the way back from that. But and
yeah,
they also
we'll
they didn't have great weapons last year.
You're right. You're right. We'll find out. This is a big year for Flacco. Reveal. I mean, it's not going to change. He'll still get paid. He's still going to be the quarterback in 2019, but or 2018 and maybe 19. But this is a big year for where he stands in the league.
Yeah. Speaking of big years, this is going to be a constant topic of discussion. Not that this guy ever lacked for being discussed, but Cam Newton was number 13 on our countdown. I mean, look, he is going to have to do some things differently there. You know, he's coming back from the shoulder surgery, and they're going to bring him back slowly this summer. But they're going to ask him to play a little bit differently. And that, you know, that power run game they used to use him on, that might not be such a I'm not saying they're going to go 100% away from it, but I think there's no doubt you won't see it as much. And you're going to see them trying to get the ball out of his hands quickly.
And I am skeptical of that. I think I had him. I had him 14, and it's because of what he does in the running game. If we're talking just as a passer, he's not top 20 to me. He has a talent. He's a great power thrower, but he's not a timing and rhythm passer. He's not a precision passer, and he's wildly inconsistent mechanically, in ways that really a pro should not be at this stage of their career ever. So he's valuable for the running game, and if they reduce that with him, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. I'd rather have, let's say he runs the ball and it shortens his career by 2 or 3 years, fine, give me the shorter career, because that'll be a much, much better career than the alternative.
Well, let me ask you this. In 2015, he was obviously much better than in 2016. When you look back at last year, problems up front, problems with the offensive line, both injuries and a lack of talent. If you can protect him a little bit better, like they did in 2015, could you see, basically, if you push last year out of your mind and you said, here's Cam Newton, we're going to protect him better, he's going to get the ball out quicker, would you feel more comfortable about that? Would you feel more comfortable with Cam as that type of thrower like you saw in 2015?
Well, what you said there, those are two different things. Protect him better and get the ball out quicker are two separate things. You get the ball out quicker because you don't think you can protect him better. So they were great in pass, well, not great, but they were very good in pass protection in 2015. It's because so much of their passing concepts are built off of their running concepts that impacts the pass rush, it impacts the way your guys block, that naturally keeps more bodies in to help pass protect. And when Newton has a clean pocket, yeah, he's a much better player, as any QB would be. The problem is when you're inconsistent mechanically, those inconsistencies rear their ugly head when you're under duress or in stressful situations. You revert back to your norms, and your norms are where you're inconsistent. So Cam Newton needs good pass protection. He'll make throws with bodies around him. He's tough enough to do that. He'll sometimes make great ones because he's so talented. But a lot of times when his pocket moves, we talked about Brady's still Tom Brady when he has to adjust even 1% or 10% or 20. If Newton has to adjust 1%, a lot of times then he becomes a toss-up player. That's where the inconsistencies show up.
Okay. Number 14 was Carson Palmer. I mean, look, does he still have it? He's a guy who they couldn't protect a year ago, and everything sort of fell apart in Arizona.
Yeah, and we can go real quick on Palmer. He needs good protection at this point in his career. I think this probably stems from their offensive line issues, but it's ultimately his responsibility still. He didn't read the field with the clarity and decisiveness that he did in 2015.
All right. And a guy I'm going to be fascinated to watch in 2017, Jameis Winston. When I watch Winston, and this is my theory on Jameis Winston, and it's kind of similar with Eli Manning, you know, obviously improved, you know, improved talent here with Deshaun Jackson and O.J. Howard coming in. I feel like with Jameis, when he gets fooled when he gets beat by a defense, when he sees something he didn't expect to see, and everyone, you know, every quarterback sort of has that moment where it sort of, you know, it sort of breaks your brain for like a split second, and obviously that'll ruin a play in some fashion. I'd be like, some guys just tuck it in and take a sack, some guys try and escape, some guys try and throw it away. I feel like Jameis, and I think Eli's the same way, his reaction is, you know what, I'm gonna chuck it. I'm just gonna force it in there and you know, let's see Mike Evans make a play or something like that. And I feel like that's what leads to these sort of, you know, head scratching, perplexing interceptions, of which he throws a lot of those.
I don't have a problem with, he needs to reduce the interceptions, and he'll probably always be a 15th interception type guy. That's what he was at Florida State when he was playing at, where he was the man. He was the best player on the field. I don't have a problem with him as much because a lot of them, when he's throwing these interceptions, he's operating at a 400 level quarterbacking level, so to speak. 400 level level. There you go. He's seeing things that advanced veterans tend to see, and sometimes he's wrong in what he's seen, but at least he's reading out of those chapters.
Yeah.
A lot of it's the QBs that are throwing picks at the 200 level, the Blake Bortles guys that are throwing interceptions on more basic stuff and getting the simpler stuff wrong. That's where you have an issue. So Winston sees the game like a veteran QB. He's just not very experienced yet, so he's going to make some mistakes there, but he's challenging himself mentally. He challenges himself much more than other players, and I think rightfully so. I mean, you see a lot of great plays that way as well with him, and they understand what he is in Tampa Bay too. They realize he's that kind of player. He's a methodical guy, kind of also like Blake Bortles, incidentally. He's not twitchy, so they're going to be a downfield passing offense, which means Winston's going to have to read safeties, not just linebackers underneath. So that's his style of play. It's a distinct style. I think it's going to work for them. They have the weapons. I believe in Winston. I think he's going to be a really good player. Maybe not immediately this year, but by 2018, I think they're going to be happy with what they have.
Yeah, he is my hot take dark horse pick for MVP.
Hmm.
Yeah. The last three here, because we didn't really say we'd go beyond the top 15, but Bradford, Wentz, and Mariota. Anyone you want to touch on there?
Wentz, I think, will be top 10. I thought he'd be by the end of last season. That, you know, he was not as consistent in the middle of the year, so that hasn't come true yet. I am really, really bullish on Carson Wentz. I think he's going to be, he's who I want more than anybody we've talked about on the show today, if we're talking about building for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the guys who didn't make our, I mean, look, we're going to hear it about Dak Prescott not being on the list. Dak Prescott, if you said Dak Prescott was top 15, yeah, sure. I could see that. I could get behind that. You know, guys like Kirk Cousins didn't get a vote on this list. He's certainly a guy you could put up there. Ryan Tannehill, I think you could make an argument for. There are other good quarterbacks that we didn't discuss in the show. And
well, here's what we need to do. Somebody write us in a mailbag question and just say, just do it, technicality, so we can put it in our big beach show or whatever the hell we're calling it. But write in the mailbag, why aren't those guys on the list? Because that's a 20-minute conversation, Prescott and Cousins, when you do both of them. And there's a lot of good football stuff within that conversation. A lot. It's a really good one. And I understand why there's been so much double-sided mentality in Washington, why half the people in that organization think they should assign Cousins, why the other half think we shouldn't, and they're in a weird position now because of it. There's an explanation for that, though. That's not just ineptitude running the show. There's a reason that kind of thing happens.
So we should expect a mailbag question from a Mandy Benoit from Boise, Idaho.
Yes,
on this next show.
Yes, correct.
All right. Well, that's a wrap. Thanks for sticking around for so long. We know you want to hear about quarterbacks, though, so we didn't mind going a little long today. Again, mailbag show coming up next week. For now, thank you so much to Matt Booker, our crack researcher this week. Great stuff, making this sound smart. And, of course, thank you, as always, to producer Lou Pellegrino and editor Chris Basil, the guys at Digital Media, absolutely the best in the business. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Like we said, keep the mailbag questions coming. You guys are you're the best. You're the smartest listeners out there. So I don't mean that just to flatter you, though that should flatter you. But Yeah, we have the smartest questions, the smartest listeners in the football podcasting world here. So please keep on sending the questions, keep on sending the comments. We love hearing from you. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Mailbag Show next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.